precisely.
Thank you. Okay, so today I'm switching to chalk. So what, let me just give the plan of the lecture today first. First, I will only consider today the full shift over two symbols. Essentially, at the beginning, actually, it will be any finite number of symbols. But so you can really forget completely today about this finite subshift, more complicated setting. We will really consider only full shift, so any sequences. So I want first to introduce a notion which is closely related to the multicones of yesterday, which is called coarse. So I will define that in a moment. Then I want to come back slightly on the notion of principal component that I introduced yesterday. So these two steps will actually be valid for any number of symbols, a full shift of any number of symbols. And then I will consider now with the full shift on two symbols some very special, important non-principal components which are called free components. And in each case is of the hyperbolicity locus, the locus where the cocycle is uniformly hyperbolic. Then I will give some more precise statements on the components of the hyperbolicity locus in the case of the full shift on two symbols. I gave some approximation of these statements yesterday, but I will give something more precise. I will try to give a sketch of the proof, or at least of a part of the proof. And finally, I will try to justify, not perhaps to justify, but to explain in more detail the drawing of the dynamics of the multicone. Remember, there was a drawing in the case of two-fifths yesterday, so the dynamics of the multicone. I will try to give more details on this thing. Actually, not really with a proof, but with more explanations. Okay, so this is the plan. So let's start with the coarse. So coarse are some more intrinsic version of the multicones. Let me define them. So as I said, we are in the case of the full shift over a number of symbols, at least two symbols. So let me introduce the map ES and EU. They are just the map that given so a point X in the, so X is just a sequence of letters in the alphabet. So ES of X, I forgot. I'm taking, this is a parameter, which is in the hyperbolicity locus. So this defines the cocycle, and then given the cocycle, given a sequence of letters in the alphabet is just one n with this notation. I just write ES of X for the stable direction at X and EU of X for the unstable one. So they are just directions, so they are points in P1. Okay. I had this decomposition FR2, at each point into a stable and unstable space, and this gives direction in P1. So these maps are continuous. And let me write KS for the image. So because the maps are continuous and the set of sequence is continuous with obvious topology, is compact with obvious topology, these two sets are compact subsets of P1. Now, there is an obvious remark is that ES of X, which is a stable direction, it's a direction which will contract exponentially fast in the future. ES of X only depends on the coordinates of X in the positive time, and U of X only depends on XI, but now with negative time, strictly negative time. And now, the consequence of this fact is that I must have ES of X different from EU of Y for all X and Y. And the reason is that here I'm using really that I have the full shift given the future of X, the positive coordinates of X, and the past of Y, the negative coordinates of Y. I can just construct a point Z which has the same future and X and the same past of Y. There is no problem of compatibility of future and past because I have the full shift. I would have a problem with the subshift. I would have to argue, enfin, the situation would be slightly more complicated, but here I have a point Z which has the same future of S, ES, and the same past of than Y, and so it means because the for any point the stable and unstable direction are always different, it means that you have this relation. Okay, in particular, these two compact sets are disjoint. Okay, these are not quite the course that I want because a compact set in P1, or in the circle, can still be some complicated object. So what I will do is to simplify this object, but in an intrinsic way, and it's a very, what I will do, let me draw that first, and then explain if I give, so I have two sets, say KS in red, this would be KS and KY and KU, which is distinct, disjoint, okay, so complicated set. What I will do is to fill the holes in a sense, but fill the holes in a way that they are still disjoint. So here I would do that here, no, actually even that, and then that here. Well, here I have just one point, and here I would do that, 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 for instance. So the precise definition is the following. So U, which is called the unstable core, is defined by the fact that the complement of U is the union of the components of P1 minus KU, which intersect KS, and the symmetric definition, well, in the, so you write the symmetric definition for S, which is the stable core. P1 minus S is the union of the components of P1 minus KS, which intersect KU. Okay. You can, so if the red one was S, this, this would be S, and this would be U here. So the effect of this, because of compactness, the components of this open set which intersect KS are only a finite number. So the properties of S and U are the following. S and U are still compact, disjoint. They contain KS and KU respectively. Alors, it was clear from this definition here that I had that the AI here of, I should write here, AI of KS is actually, KU, sorry, is actually included in KU and AI minus 1 of KS was included in KS. And as a consequence here, I will have the same properties. It's easy to check. No, sorry, it's a minus 1. And this for all I. And also, as I said, S, U have finitely many components. And they are alternating. The number of components for S and U is the same, and you will meet going around the circle a component of S, then a component of U, as the drawing suggests here. In this case, I have four components for each of S and U. Okay, so these are the cores. They are intrinsically defined for any H, any parameter in the hyperbolicity locus, and an important fact, easy fact, is that SU depends continuously in the Hausdorff topology, say, SU depends continuously on the parameter, being constrained to stay in the hyperbolicity locus in this open set. Okay, so for instance, the number of components of S on or U, the same number actually, is also the number of components of the tight multicone that we have seen yesterday. Actually, the multicone is very closely, very closely related to S and U. The multicone is some thickening of U. You have to do that slightly carefully, but it's essentially a thickening of U. Okay. Now, these cores give a slight variation of on the multicone criterion of yesterday. I won't prove it, but I will write it. Here I have made the direct construction of S and U, but assume that you don't know in advance that the parameter is uniformly hyperbolic, but on the other hand, assume that, for some parameter, now in the general parameter space, there exist two sets, S, U, which have the same property as above. So as above, meaning that this free property, meaning that they satisfy this free properties here. I would like to conclude, I'm not very far from the multicone criterion which is here, only that it's only included instead of being strictly included. Before, we had that the multicone should be contained, the closure of the image should be contained in the interior. So here it's not just a simple inclusion. So I need some extra hypothesis. Assume also any product that I can make with these matrices. So any product with L less than the number of components of U, or S, as I said, it's the same number, so L fixed, but less than that, is different, this product, is different from plus or minus identity in SL2R. So then, actually you can show that the parameter is uniformly hyperbolic. So it's a variation on the multicone criterion, where you don't assume that it's strictly contained inside, but you are assuming this hypothesis. Okay, I will use that in a moment. So this is the reason that I mentioned that. Okay, so this is all that I wanted to say on this first point, and I will use them slightly later when I will study these three components that will appear.
All yeah? Products in all orders.
Yeah, all possible, for all I1, all IL, between 1 and n. Okay, I will, won't use here. Because so, coming back to this principal component, let me first recall that the dynamics of a single matrix at the moment on projective space. In the hyperbolic case, I have two fixed points on this projective space that I am denoting by SA and UA, stable and unstable direction, and on the projective level, the unstable direction is attracting and the stable one is repelling. In the parabolic case, I can think that the two directions are actually equal, and the dynamics now is this is a semi-stable point where dynamics flows from this point on this side and goes to this on the, this side, or the opposite, I mean one of the mirror image of this picture. And finally, in the elliptic case, the fixed point would be inside from a complex point of view, and so I get some rotation, no fixed point on the boundary, so it goes around. Now, I just wanted to recall, because if I'm considering, so I mentioned more or less this proposition yesterday, but I will build from this proposition afterwards to consider these three components. I have so, I have equivalence between the following property. So still with the full shift on n symbols. The first is that the parameter that I'm looking at belong to a principal component of H. The second, so, that I mentioned yesterday is that this parameter, so A1, AN, leave a fixed cone invariant. Or invariant for me, I recall that it means that I have some interval, a cone in two dimensions corresponds to an interval in parameter space, a fixed open interval. In P1. And so I should have this interval is strictly sent into itself by for every matrix AI in this list. And finally, equivalently, there exists an interval, again open E in P1, such that on one side, the unstable direction of every AI is contained in I, and the stable one is on the opposite contained in the complementary cone, which is E prime, the opposite cone. So the picture is very simple. I should have two parts here with stable direction. These are the I'm drawing these dynamics to indicate that this is a stable direction, unstable one. So I will have some picture like that. Every matrix going from one part of the circle to the other part. Okay, so this is, the proof is completely elementary. Let me just not write anything, but just discuss briefly. First, it's not difficult to see that these two are equivalent, because I've just drawn this here. You can see, so assume for instance that you have a fixed, I should say that the matrix have to be hyperbolic, and because I'm talking about the stable and unstable direction, the matrices have to be hyperbolic to begin with. Okay, so assuming that this is true, if you have such a property, you can check that it's impossible in these two cases. It's clear here that if an interval doesn't go into itself. Here, there are intervals which are invariant in a sense, but such an interval here, but it's not going into itself. It's the boundary point is invariant also. Okay, so this property implies actually that the matrix is hyperbolic, and also implies clearly, once you have an invariant thing, that the interval has to contain U and not contain S, and so you get this property here. Okay, so this direction is clear. The opposite direction is also clear, because the interval E that is here will have this property. Okay? So these two are clearly equivalent. And now to see the equivalence with the first part, on one side, if you assume that you are in a principal component, it means by definition of principal component, that you are in the same component of a parameter of the form epsilon A, with the epsilon I plus or minus one, and A hyperbolic. Well, because I'm looking at the action of P1, I can just forget about the sign, assuming, for instance, that the trace of A is larger than 2, and that all the signs are plus 1. And now, if I'm looking, if I deformed from this point, starting here, I have all the S equal and all the U equal, so obviously this property is satisfied. And when I will deform this situation, I will keep this property because you cannot cross first, because the parameters stay hyperbolic. This property is certainly always satisfied, and the matrices have to stay hyperbolic. And I cannot meet some U equal to some S. It's the same argument that I gave before, that the KS and KU were disjoint. Unstable direction never can be equal to a stable direction if the parameter is uniformly hyperbolic. So this condition implies this one. The opposite implication, you have to make a small calculation. If you start with this situation, it's not very difficult to deform explicitly, completely this situation to this one by a path which stays inside the hyperbolicity locus. It's a very easy calculation. Okay. So this is for boundary components, principal components, sorry. And now let me just observe that in this special case of principal components, the boundary is fairly easy to describe. So this is a kind of complement of this. if some parameter belongs to the boundary of a principal component, well, you either some AI is parabolic, or, alors, it's either or, but not, both are possible. I mean, it's possible to have both at the same time, or there exist I and G, distinct I or G, such that the unstable direction of AI becomes equal to the stable direction of AG. This is an example, an easy one, because of what I called yesterday heteroclinic connection. But it's a very specific one. It's a very specific one. If you recall, the theorem of yesterday that I will actually prove more or less tomorrow in the general case, for subshift. We could have here any word. Here it's a word of one letter just, okay? But in the general case, you could have more complicated words, or at least longer words, not arbitrarily long, but longer words. And here also you could have not only that, but some matrix coming here. But in this particular case, it's very simple. And the reason for this property, so these are obstruction to uniform hyperbolicity, as I explained yesterday, but they are the only ones that can occur in this particular case of the boundary of principal component, because I'm looking at the equivalence of I and free here, and you see that for this to stop to happen at some point along a path, for instance, then you must either lose the hyperbolicity of some of the AI, which correspond to the first case, or you keep all the AI hyperbolic, but then for this to stop to happen, well, it's clear that you have just a finite number of points which are the S here, a finite number of points which are the U here, and the set of S points has to collide with the set of U points for this to stop to happen. And the collision has to happen with I different from G, because I equal G here correspond to the parabolic case, where UAI is equal to SAI. It means that the matrix itself is parabolic, which is the first case. Okay, so this is all one needs to know about these principal components. Now I want to now specialize really to the full shift on two symbols. Till now I could have any finite number of symbols, but from now on I will assume that I have the full shift on two symbols, and I want to first to describe these three components, which are the simplest one, which are non-principal. So let me define. So I will not now have two matrices, so I will just write A, B for the two matrices. And let me describe, two open sets, actually, closely related one. So in parameter space, the first one is a set of matrices such that the trace of A, B, AB are larger than 2, but the product of the free traces is negative. And, well, if I'm in this situation, up to changing the signs of A and B, I can go to this set here, which is the set where the trace of A is larger than 2, the trace of B is larger than 2, but the trace of AB is smaller than minus 2. So, okay, these two sets are essentially the same from the point of view of parameter space. I'm just adjusting the signs of A and B here to get to this set here. So now I claim that, so proposition, say, this set here is the union of two components of H. So it means that this set here will be the union of H components because I can change the sign of A and B independently. Actually the two here will be mirror image of each other. So it's really essentially one component. And for AB in this set, so after knowing that parameters in this set are uniformly hyperbolic, I can consider the stable and unstable course or the tight multicones associated to these parameters. S and U have two components. Alors, actually, what what we will show more specifically is that we have the following feature. So this is P1 again. Let me check that corresponds to my, just in order to keep the same orientation, the same orientation that on my drawing. So here is B, here is A, here is AB, and here is BA. So this is would be the stable direction. Okay, so these are the stable unstable direction of A, B, and AB. Observe that I know that these four matrices are hyperbolic from the properties here, in particular because BA is conjugated to AB. Okay, so I'm claiming that the eight points are in this direction, are distinct and in this cyclic order, up to a mirror image. This is precisely the reason there are two components and not one. I can ever this drawing, or you flip orientation of the circle and you get a similar picture. Okay? Now, actually, we will see that the U, the unstable core, will have these two components here, and the stable one will have these two components here. Two intervals that you see here. Okay, how to see that? First, there is a small elementary lemma. Is that for, if you take AB in, so I will, this set, open set, so this is obviously an open set in parameter space, and taking AB in this open set, then the points UA, UB, SA, SB, UAB, SAB are distinct. These six points are really distinct. And similarly, if you replace, so you take UA, UB, SA, SB, UBA, and SBA. So, why is that? So first, these two cannot be equal because, UA and SA cannot be equal because A is hyperbolic, is not parabolic. These two are not equal because B is hyperbolic. And these two are not equal because AB is is hyperbolic. Now, if we had some equality between some other pair here, it means that A and B will have a common eigenvector. Okay, for instance, well, it would be trivial directly, for instance, if these two are equal, but it's also true if these two are equal, because in this case, AB and B have a common eigenvector, and it means that A and B have a common eigenvector. But now, if assume, for instance, that A and B, assume that A and B have a common eigenvector, then the eigenvalue of this eigenvector has to be positive because the trace of A is positive. It has the eigenvalue for B also has to be positive, and then because it's a common eigenvector, the corresponding eigenvalue for AB would be the product, and so it would also be positive. So if two are equal, then A and B have a common eigenvector, it means that the trace of AB would be positive as the trace of A and the trace of B is positive. Okay? So the proof is that the fact that the product of the trace was negative implies that A and B do not have a common eigenvector. And this shows this lemma here, and the proof here is completely similar. Okay? So this is the first step. Now, the good part, the main point of the lemma is that now, instead of having to prove that this picture is true for all value of the parameter of the matrices in this open set, I will have only to consider a special value. Alors first, let me write the matrices in a special basis where I will use as a basis the unstable direction of A and the unstable direction of B. So let me So the matrix A will, so because I'm using as the first vector, so I have taken E1, the unstable direction, and E2, so I know that these two directions now are distinct, okay, so I can use both of them as a basis for the space, so I'm conjugating, if you prefer, and then using these two directions, the first matrix will have this form, and then the second matrix with lambda larger than one, the second will have this form with mu larger than one, because it's the unstable direction. Then computing the trace, so the trace of A and B are lambda plus lambda minus one, mu plus mu minus one, and the trace of AB from this formula is lambda mu minus 1 plus lambda 1 minus mu plus uv. It's just a simple computation. And you see that this must be less than minus 2. And now it's clear, what is clear is that uv has to be negative. And so you have two components, at least two components. Now, this one, which actually corresponds to this picture here, and the other one, which corresponds to the mirror image. Now, you have to check that once you fix the signs of U and V, what you get is actually a connected set. You don't have more than two components. You have at least two components, because these two cases can occur, but you don't have more than two components in the set here. It's quite clear now that you can deform inside this condition, which guarantees that the trace of A and B are larger than two, and then inside this set, once lambda and mu are fixed, this is a fixed number, And in the UV space, you get something like that. So two connected sets in the UV space. So this proves the fact that you have two components. It's still not proven that the set is contained in the hyperbolicity locus. What is just proven is that there are two components. Now, so consider this one. The other one, as I said, is just a mirror image. Now you want to prove that this picture happens. And what you do is just a computation that I will not do. In this very special case, you take lambda large. Mu equal to lambda. So now when mu is equal to lambda, you get 2 here. And then so the condition is UV strictly less than -4. But actually the computation is rather simple if you take this special value for U lambda minus 1 equal to minus V. With lambda large, the product UV will be indeed less than -4. And for this value, actually, you can compute everything, all the directions, stable and unstable, and you check that these directions are in this order. I mean, just the 8 points that I've drawn here will be in the cyclic ordering will be exactly this one. Now, the point of the lemma and is this, because this order was true for this very particular parameter here, so it's a very special parameter, but for this very special parameter, you have this order. But now, this order cannot be broken, because to break this order, this cyclic order, staying inside the set H identity plus, you should have 2 of these 6 points equal at some point. They will have to cross. Or breaking this, having 2 of these 6 points equal. Because they are always distinct, the order has to stay the same everywhere in the set, in the component that I'm looking at, this particular component of H identity plus. Okay, so at this point, I have not completely proven the proposition. I have proven that this picture actually is happening for every parameter in the particular component here, corresponding to this case that I'm looking at. To conclude, I just want to prove that indeed, I'm defining now S and U as this interval here, S as the union of these two intervals, and U as the union of these two intervals. But I want to check the properties that I had before. So, S and U are two compact sets. They have a finite number of components. They are alternating. So, I have this property of the product of the products. Because I have two components, I have only to consider the products of A and B up to length 2. So I have to consider A, B, A square, B square, A, B, B, A. AB are hyperbolic, so certainly these products are different from identity. So the last thing that I have to check, is the most important one, is that I have indeed A, U contained in U, B, U contained in U, A minus 1, S contained in S, and B minus 1, S contained in S. Okay. Now, let's check first, for instance, this one. The 4 are proven in the same way. If I'm looking at the image of U, so I have to look, you see, but by, let me use some other chalk. By A, this point is fixed. The other fixed point of A is here. So if I'm looking at the image of this point here, well, the image of UBA is actually UAB, because A is conjugating BA and AB. So the image of this one is actually this one. So you see that this big, large interval here is actually going to this small one. So this large interval contains both components of U, and the image is just this component of U. So this proves this property here, and the others are proven similarly, actually using the four intervals, I mean the four relations and four intervals. Okay. So I have checked the proposition that guarantees that actually the pair AB is uniformly hyperbolic because of this picture when AB is in this set H identity plus. So I have proven all the assertions of H, including that it's very easy to check that U, S, I won't do that, but to check that U and S are actually exactly this interval. Once you know that the parameter is uniformly hyperbolic, you can define the stable and unstable course, and you check that this course, the unstable course, is exactly this union of these two intervals, and the stable one is the union of these two intervals. Okay, so much for the free component. So now I will state the general results for the other components. So the point of defining these three components is that all the other non-principal components are actually defined from this one. And they are defined using the following maps. So defining a map in parameter space, so given two matrices AB, I will define the new parameter by this formula. So this is one relation, and there is one transformation, and there is a symmetric one, which is this one. So this defines two diffeomorphisms of parameter space. And I want to consider M, which is the monoid, so which is just all diffeomorphisms which are obtained by composing these two in any order that you want, a finite number of times. So this is the free monoid, actually, generated by F plus and F minus. All products that you can do, products for composition. So start with identity, and this is the reason for the notation H identity here, and then F plus, F minus, F plus square, F plus, F minus, F minus square, etc. Okay, now with this I can state, well, first I will have several theorems. So the first one, say theorem A, is that the components of H for the pull shift on two symbols are the principal component. And the F minus one of the connected components of, so I've just defined this set. I've explained that this set H identity is made of eight components of the hyperbolicity locus, but the H identity plus was two components and eight with the change of signs. So for each of these eight components, okay, I can take the pre-image by F, so for any F in this monoid here. Okay, so I can use any word that I want in F plus and F minus, any finite word, including the empty word, which corresponds to the case of H identity. And then I get a component of H. And this is the full list, together with the principal components of the components of H. So this is the first statement, then as a complement, say is that a compact set in parameter space intersects only finitely many components. This just means that when I get the length of the word here, so the number of components here is finite. So the meaning of that is that the way that the if I let the length of the word here go to infinity, then the corresponding component also go to infinity. And actually, yeah, let me say like that. And finally, so I defined yesterday the ellipticity locus. This is the set of parameters where there is some product of the matrix, which is elliptic. And then here, we know that. So this is an open set E, which is disjoint from H. And we know that actually they have a common boundary, E and H, which is the complement of the union. Okay, so these are the results. Let me just reformulate, I will reformulate, say, these three results in three propositions, which are actually the one which we prove. The propositions are the following. The first one is just to show that if you start with F in the monoid, then taking the inverse image of this set here, so this was contained in the hypermodicity locus, a priori it's not obvious that the pre-image is contained, so we have to prove that first. And the second one, well, the third one will be this one. So let me just state the second one. Is that the parameter space is the disjoint union of what? Alors, the first part is the closure, this is just the closure of principal components. The second part is the ellipticity locus, and then what you get is you take the inverse image of the closure of this set here, which is just the same set but taking large inequalities instead of strict inequalities, and letting F vary here, you get this. Okay, so you have this open set and this closed set, and so this is really a partition of parameter space. Okay. I'm seeing that I don't have really time to explain the proof. Let me just give a very short idea of this one here. Why? If you prove this, you will have also that what you get here, this is just a union of 8 components of the hypermodicity locus. What I won't have time to explain is that there are no more than these components, that you get all the components in this way. This requires a more complicated argument that I cannot do now. Let me, so just very shortly explain here. The point is the following, is that you can keeping the picture that I have here, you introduce actually a subshift of finite type on four symbols. Let me call the symbols, so this is just instead of doing only the products of A and B, I want to use also A minus 1 and B minus 1, and to use them as I am using as products of reduced words in the free group on two generators. So in the language of symbolic dynamics, what I have is four symbols, just let me call the symbols A, B, A bar and B bar, where this will correspond to A, this to B, and this to A minus 1, and this to B minus 1. And in order to only get the reduced word, what I'm putting as a possible transition, what actually I'm putting as forbidden transition, which is the same thing, is that I will write this, so the simplification in the free group, so these are forbidden transitions. So, in this case, the words that I will write here, when I substitute for these four letters, these four matrices here, will exactly be the reduced words in the free group on two generators. Now, the point is that when I have this picture here, what I get is that the parameter, so now the parameter is this one, with four letters, this parameter is uniformly hyperbolic if AB has both. And the reason is the same as before, actually. I mean, we have seen that this interval, this full interval here, was going inside here. So it means that this one is also going here. I did not use before that this one was going here. But if you, and this full interval is still going on this one, so this one is going inside here. So it's essentially a ping-pong thing for those who are familiar with this theory. What I will get directly from this picture is that this parameter is uniformly hyperbolic. So now I can look not only at words in A and B, but also words which use A minus 1 and B minus 1. But now if this is uniformly hyperbolic, it means that when I'm making a product reduced word in this letter, the size will grow exponentially fast with the length. But now, if I apply any actually diffeomorphism like that, I will transform any word in AB in some word in, now I have to use the inverse of these maps, so I will introduce of A minus 1 and B minus 1. But I will get some new word, now not only using AB, but using also A minus 1 and B minus 1. And the length of this new word will be proportional to the length of the old word. So because the size of the matrix is growing exponentially fast with the length, even after the diffeomorphism, the property will still be true, and this means that I will still be in the hyperbolicity locus. Okay, so this is a very rough sketch of the proof here, but it's not a difficult property, so I won't really explain that part. Let me just to finish explain what happens for the two-fifths parameter. So the last part, but I'm not without a proof. But just to explain what you do, so the two-fifths parameter correspond actually to this element of the monoid. If you start, it's actually the opposite. If you start with AB, you have apply. No, it's the opposite. AB, And so this is F minus of this, and then applying here, you will get AB. So you recognize 2/5 because the total number of letters is 5, and the number of B appearing here is 2. And this is the relation between the rational between 0 and 1 and the words in the monoid. There is a correspondence between the elements of the monoid and the rationals between 0 and 1, and the correspondence is as I indicated. So, for instance, the identity corresponds to 1/2. Now, once you have this here, so let me draw here. So what you have here is 2/5 as the Faraday center of the Faraday interval 1/3, 1/2. So you recognize again the number, here, this corresponds to 1/3 and here to 1/2, okay? And the product of the two, which is AB, corresponds to 2/5. As relation to this picture here. Now, you make all possible circular permutation of this word. So, what you will, and you order them. So, the order is actually the following. It's the lexicographical order, starting with the first word here, but you have to divide this one in two parts. Don't have time to explain too much, but the following one will be this one, and then this one. So this should be BA, BA, and finally BA. Here you put AB and BA. Here, AB, ABA, BAA. And finally, so you are able to draw. So this is the picture which is analogous for the ones of the free components. Only that it's now not for free, but for the component corresponding to 2/5. So for instance, here I will get something like that. What I mean here is that this matrix, this product here, will be hyperbolic, and the stable direction will be here, the unstable one will be here. The same for this matrix will be hyperbolic, with stable direction here, the unstable here. For instance, the unstable core in this case, the unstable core will be the union of this interval here, these 5 intervals, and the stable core will be the union of these 5 intervals here. Let me just observe that the particular component that I'm looking at is defined by the fact, taking for instance, changing sign if necessary, the fact that the trace of AB is larger than 2, the trace of AAB is larger than 2, that the trace of AB, AAB is smaller than minus 2. So each of these components is defined in a similar way by free condition of the trace. And once you have put the free condition on the trace, you have two possibilities depending of mirror image again. I'm just concluding this, just to observe that you see that in this particular case of the full shift on two symbols, when I have this non-principal component, when I go to the boundary, I'm not seeing any heterokinic connection. It only happens for the principal component in this case. You see that if I'm going to the boundary of the component here, the only thing that can happen is that one of these three matrices here will become parabolic. And this is the only possibility in this case. And again, so only in the principal one that you see heteroclinic connection, and this will be very different from the case that we will see tomorrow with a full shift on more than two symbols. So I stop here. And so tomorrow we will see how, in a sense, how the situation with the full shift of three or more symbols is really more complicated and different from the situations here. Thank you.